Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. In the studio, we have Nathan, we have Maya, we have Benny White, who is co-hosting with me today. We're going to be talking about how campaign ads can get you in trouble and a few other things. We were talking just before the show, and you were talking about the situation where some of the nursing homes or assisted living facilities aren't supporting helping people vote. What are you doing to correct this issue?
That's right. The recorder reached out to me, or the Pima County recorder reached out to me during the primary election and brought to my attention a problem that we have senior citizens in assisted living facilities and nursing homes that are being prohibited from voting by the restrictions that have been brought on by the COVID crisis and their interpretation of the governor's executive orders. What has happened is some of the nursing homes are not, or the assisted living homes are not allowing mail to come in, for instance. Some of the residents will have their mail sent to their children's home, and then the children bring the mail in when they've come in for a visit. And some of these facilities have completely shut that door so that the children can't bring the mail in, and the mail, of course, involving here mail ballots. So those voters weren't getting their mail ballots, and there wasn't any way for election assistance teams from the recorder's office to go into those facilities and help those voters get their ballots. So I'm working with the Attorney General's office and the governor's office to facilitate a process whereby people that want to vote can vote. The optimum situation would be to alert all those facilities that they need to assist their residents in requesting vote by mail ballots. That would be the best. That way the mail would come in. It would be handled normally during the process. The resident would vote that ballot and then send it back, and it would be processed along with all the other mail ballots. So that would be the best. But there are situations that come up that people need additional assistance for one reason or another. They may have some physical problems that they're having to deal with, or vision problems, or different things, and they need someone to come in. And what we're working with now with, like I say, the Attorney General's office and the governor's office is making sure that we protect everyone from the virus problem, but also that we allow people to vote. Both the federal law and our state constitution prohibits any government agency from putting in restrictions or prohibitions that prevent people from voting. I heard a very disturbing story this morning that one of the larger facilities here in Pima County responded to this proposal of, why should we do this now? We haven't been doing it for 20 years. And my response is, well, you've been violating both federal and state law, and you could lose your license. That might be a good reason to get on board. So once we get the details nailed down, we're going to go out with the media and public announcements such as this and try to get all of these facilities, which are state licensed and therefore state instrumentalities, to help us either enroll the folks in their residence in the mail voting system, or to allow us to get team voting or voting assistance teams into the facilities, or work through the procedures that we're going to develop so that people that want to vote can vote.
Can you have official, I know at a voting place, it's Republican, a Democrat, the Green Party. Can you have a team like that go to these facilities after the ballots have been sent out to collect the ballots and help these people vote?
Sure. Sure. Anyone that needs any assistance like that can call the recorder's office, and there's always people available. People can be made available to do that. And they have the protective equipment now. That was a part of a CARES Act funding that the governor dispersed through the Secretary of State's office to all the county recorders to buy the equipment necessary to do this. So the money is there. We don't need additional money. We just need some rules and regulations that everybody can agree to get this done safely.
Like, this is your day to vote, and I'm going to be there to, watch what's going on, and I'm going to take those ballots, and that's not harvesting, right? I'm going to take those ballots back and have them counted.
Sure, as long as they go to an election official, the custody is maintained, and that's compliance with the law. There are about 200 of these facilities in Pima County, so there will need to be some scheduling events available, and that hopefully will be part of the media outreach as well, as to tell of all the facilities that they need to contact a recorder. We need to develop a schedule so that we can get everybody covered that is
that wants to be covered.
Right.
That way, on election day, they can just sit there and watch the results come in, knowing they've already voted.
That's right. Their ballot will get counted.
So, party. No? Okay. What else is going on? I know, you know, there are rules that have to be followed. I know there have been complaints filed that have been totally ignored. Nothing's being done about it. How do you get them to comply with the law?
Well, there are a number of ways to comply. Sometimes if there's a criminal statute involved, and that can be either a federal criminal statute or a state criminal statute, the local law enforcement officials in the case of Pima County, it would be the Pima County attorney or the attorney general of the state of Arizona can get involved in enforcing those criminal statutes. But in addition to that, there's civil remedies such as defamation lawsuits. If you defame somebody, they can bring a civil suit against you. And defamation occurs in two different ways. It can be either slander, which is typically a voiced expression of something that is construed as fact, not just opinion, but something that is fact. That can be a slander. Also, that can be enlarged into a libel claim. And libel includes anything that's written or published or posted on a billboard, for example, or broadcast over a radio station or a television station. That becomes libel, and that has much more serious consequences because so many more people are involved in hearing that false statement, and that causes a greater level of damage to the person that is being defamed.
So if I have proof, if I want to say somebody is a racist and, you know, their social media proves that they're a racist, as long as I have that proof, then I can go ahead and either on air say it or rent a billboard and post their social media posts on that billboard, and I won't get sued.
Well, you might get sued, but the truth, the facts that you're able to present to the court will be your best defense. If you can prove beyond a preponderance of evidence in a civil case that the statement that you made is truthful, then that will provide a complete defense for you. But if it's your interpretation and you presented it as a factual statement, say that somebody was convicted of a crime, for example, and they weren't really convicted of a crime, they were maybe just investigated or charged with a crime, well, that's a per se libel situation, because any serious crime requires a lower level of proof on part of the person that's defamed to prevail in that lawsuit.
It seems to me that a lot of things are being said on both sides, attacking each other, instead of saying, this is what I want to do if I'm elected, this is my plan. They're beating each other up. Do they have proof that McSally took $600,000 from, you know, the medical, whatever it was, and what's his name, Mark Kelly, took money from dying senior citizens because they couldn't get their meds? I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Well, political campaigns really press the limits a lot of times. Candidates tend to be fairly responsible in their campaigns. Independent expenditures, not so much. And they will go outside the boundaries in claims like that. And they're betting on the come that they won't be sued, and if they are sued, they'll prevail in court. Candidates a lot of times will make statements like that, knowing that they probably won't be sued because they may not have the financial resources to make a payment, and the other side knows that. And bringing these lawsuits is very expensive. You have to hire very competent lawyers to be able to present these cases in court. They're very complex. In many instances, you have to bring in experts that try to differentiate between opinion statements and factual statements. So these can be very, very complex. And normally the damage is done.
I was going to say, it's not in a timely manner.
No.
You can't chop them off at the knees when it's happening. You have to go through this arduous process.
Right.
And it's just, you know, somebody's already elected into office and you really don't think they should be there because of their history. But the process failed, in my opinion.
Right, and that's another reason that there are not lawsuits brought in many cases is because, for instance, in this present election, we're in the beginning of October now, and the election's in November. Well, if you bring a lawsuit now for a defamation claim, that lawsuit probably won't even get heard until March or April of next year, and the election decision has been made by the voters. Well before that. So everyone loses interest, and when you start writing checks to lawyers, even people that have been damaged start losing interest. So those lawsuits don't have a long life.
That's too bad. There's got to be a way to make it a little more civilized.
Well, you would like that, but we have to go back to the Foundation Supreme Court case in this instance, which was Sullivan versus New York Times. And in that lawsuit, they made a distinction between individual citizens who are defamed and the thresholds and the levels of proof that have to be shown versus people that are public figures or matters of public interest. And the thresholds are very, very high. And all political candidates are, of course, matters of public interest, and they are public figures, of course, if they're an elected official. So that lawsuit really opened the door on First Amendment privileges for people that you can say a lot of things against a public official that will not cause you to be sued just because it has to be a reckless negligence. You didn't do any research to find out the truth of the matter, or you completely disregarded evidence to the contrary. Those kinds of things will be basis for someone that's been defamed to recover in a lawsuit. But short of that, if it again is a statement that, well, I tried to do everything I could, I couldn't find the records, those kinds of things, the courts are probably not going to rule in favor of the defamed person.
What about what Russia's doing?
Russia,
with all the fake ads and the things that are going on that aren't paid for by, you know, the candidate or the candidate's party.
Well, they have a pretty good treasury. I don't know how you would ever recover in those cases.
That.
They are interjecting their opinions and their statements into the social media, especially trying to influence people, or at least that's the claim. I've not seen any direct evidence of that, but I'm not an FBI agent, and I don't have access to all of their records and things. But I have read the congressional reports that have come out, and there seems to be a pretty close connection there between various countries. And unfortunately, the United States exercises those same types of activities to influence elections in other countries as well. So it's a bit of a tit for tat.
I've never seen it so boldly stated until this administration, quite frankly. I know people have had influence, but this administration is just like out there.
Well, it is a problem that I think has been exacerbated to a certain extent by the wide use of social media. And everybody on social media is anonymous. You can't tell where anything came from or who said it or anything else. So that is a real problem. And people tend to listen to people that they agree with, and they oppose people that they don't agree with, and they will repeat things that they think they agree with very rapidly and loudly.
And often.
Right.
Nathan, you had a question.
Yeah, I had a question. So President Trump has expressed concern about the validity of the upcoming election, including statements saying that this election is absolutely rigged. Do you believe that there is any legitimacy to these comments?
Well, I believe there's a lot of concern on the part of the president and a lot of people in political circles. People ask me that question a lot of times. Do you believe everything President Trump says? And no, I don't. I have trouble sometimes understanding exactly what he says because he fails to complete the sentence in many cases. But he speaks in very generalized terms. He paints with a very, very broad brush. I'm sure that people bring in issues that are probably relevant in a particular state or in a particular jurisdiction that indicate that there may be problems in that state. As I think I've stated before, I was involved in the recount procedure in 2016 as a member of the Republican Lawyers Association. I went to Wisconsin to do the recount in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and saw a number of things in that jurisdiction that were different, much different than we do in Arizona. There were quite a few irregularities there, but at the end of that recount in Wisconsin, the pending litigation was in Michigan and Pennsylvania. And the records from the elections in those two states were so bad that we would never be able to reconstruct what actually happened. We didn't know how many voters there were in the polling places, how many ballots actually were cast. And those kinds of things are very, very problematic. And, you know, lawyers have a field day in there arguing both sides of the case on for their clients. But you need factual records, and I'm hopeful that we've learned some lessons from the 2016 election, and we've cleaned some things up. But the COVID crisis has brought on the increased use of mail ballots in a lot of states that don't have a very good experience with it or any experience with it. In Arizona, I'm pretty confident we have a very secure and reliable system for early ballots in that we know who we sent the ballots to, we know where the ballots came back from, and we check the voter signature. That's not the case in a lot of states. We have states that are mailing ballots out to named addresses and named voters and at their registered address, and we know that those are not current. So, but those ballots still get delivered. So if anybody could vote those ballots, and if the state does not check a signature or some way verify that that ballot was voted on by the designated voter, then yes, there could be a lot of fraud in those situations. We just had an incident where Pennsylvania, I believe it was, where 9 ballots from military overseas voters were discarded by somebody in the chain of custody. It looked like it might have been a postal worker. Now they're saying it was some kind of a contract worker that might have been involved with that. And those kinds of things, cumulative, can really cause a lot of concerns and a lot of legal disputes that may extend the announcement of the final results.
Yeah, and in Arizona, we've had mail-in ballots for a long time.
Right.
I mean, I've been doing it for years. And it's... Ann has really fine-tuned the system, and we really don't have a problem. But other states that aren't familiar with the mail-in ballot process, and they're just starting this because of COVID, they need to take lessons from Ann and what we're doing here in Pima County, because we're doing it the right way.
I believe we are, and as I've said before, We have a very permissive situation in Arizona where political party oversight can occur, and that's the role that I play, that we have people in the room when all of these processes are being conducted from the political parties from both sides, and we watch and we make sure. And if an election worker makes an inadvertent mistake someplace, we call it out, they correct it, and then we move on. There are some problems in some of the counties that it's not quite as transparency of that, Maricopa County being one of the major ones that I have concerns about. But overall, I think we have good accounting for the ballots and good record keeping, and we can reconstruct what happened in the event that there is a contest after the results are released.
Yeah, you don't want to have to do what Florida did, the hanging Chad situation.
No, when you get into a subjective evaluation of whether that really is a mark or not a mark, and whether that vote should have gone to that candidate, to the other candidate, that becomes very, very problematic.
Okay, we have a caller. Charles, what's on your mind?
I want to ask about the difference. Sherry just said Arizona has a mail-in ballot system. Does it, or does it actually have an absentee voter system, and the difference between the two? Benny?
Okay. Absentee typically refers to a voter has to specifically request a ballot, and then oftentimes has to state a reason that they are going to be absent from the polling place on election day, and that's where the name absentee comes from. In Arizona, we have now we call it a ballot by mail system. We used to call that early voting because we start voting 29 days prior to the election and continue up through election day. But there is a difference in the system. In Arizona, our mail voting system, you do not have to state a reason why you're not going to go to the polls. And so that's why we don't use the absentee phrase here in Arizona. We have.
Okay, but it's not true. It's truly not a mail-in ballot. It's in effect an absentee ballot. And what's the difference between the two in terms of voter verification?
Oh, in terms of verification, you still have to do it the same way. You have to sign it. You have to seal it.
Right. Even an absentee ballot, you have to sign an affidavit that you are that person and you did vote that ballot.
I started doing it when I was working the elections because it was just easier. I was always working in a poll that wasn't my precinct, so I did the early vote or mail-in ballot. But, you know, you're talking military people. People are on vacation. They still want to vote if they're at their winter home, summer home. They want it mailed there, and they'll mail it back, but it still gets verified the same way.
Right, and we have a third system, if you will, called emergency voting, and that occurs on the Saturday before election and the Monday before election. And that's set up for people that did not request a mail ballot or did not return it, and they will not be available on Tuesday, election day. They can go to a voting site in Pima County. There are three of those at the recorder's office and do what we call an emergency vote. But all of the same precautions apply there, that we still verify that voter is qualified to vote that ballot and that they signed that affidavit stating that they were who we think they are. So
right. What I'm getting to, though, is that this is not like a mail-in ballot system where the state mails a ballot automatically to every registered voter. There's a difference, right?
Yeah, we have what we call a permanent early voting list. And people that are on that list have subscribed, and they have requested that for every election they be sent automatically, without any further request, a mail ballot. And so that differentiates it from the absentee ballot system, where you have to request for a particular election that you be sent a ballot for that particular election.
Right, but it's not mass mailing of a ballot to every registered voter.
No, that's been suggested and recommended in several states by various people, including the Democratic Party, but that's not what happens in Arizona.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for listening. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or a total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900.
This is Nathan Chabin, producer for Law Matters Live Show, airing Saturday mornings at 8, when our listeners ask questions of the people who have answers. On our next show, attorney James Traynor III, chair for the Federal Election Commission, talks about election laws and what you need to know. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. We can't do this show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm to AM 1030 The Voice.
Thanks for staying with us. On the phone, we have Sheriff Napier. Good morning, Sheriff. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm most certainly keeping busy, but I'm doing great.
Awesome. I want to know more about what's going on with this lawsuit that you're filing.
Well, we have not filed yet. I gave my opponent a demand letter, which he's summarily ignored, which asked him to do some very simple things to remedy this so we could move forward with an appropriate campaign based on the issues. He called it bullying, which I found to be remarkable, and then said that the law was semantics, which is a shocking statement for a sheriff to make, and then said it was simply political theater and dismissed it. I think that was a bad strategic move on his part, but it's not the first, nor will it be the last. So we're kind of in a holding pattern right now. I have secured an attorney that's willing to press this, and we'll see where we go.
Wouldn't it behoove him, I mean, to do the right thing and just talk about what their plans are for the future rather than bad-mouthing each other? You haven't done that to him.
No, I haven't. I have a lot of ammunition in my magazine, too. If I wanted to go after him, I don't want people to vote against him. I want them to vote for me.
Right.
And that's a different take to this, but it goes so far beyond dirty politics. This isn't about dirty politics. I understand that you're going to make, dramatic statements during a campaign and perhaps even stretch the truth and engage in a little hype. That isn't what we're talking about here. His campaign posted a billboard that said, "I was guilty of a felony." Not only that I was guilty of a felony, but that I was appealing it, which would be an acknowledgement for me that I'd actually been found guilty of something and was appealing to a higher authority. That goes beyond dirty politics. That is defamation. And I heard a little bit of Benny's commentary, and he's right. Sullivan v. New York. I'm not an attorney, but I've been in this line of work for a very long time. Sullivan v. New York does establish the premise under which a public figure can sue for defamation. It does raise the bar significantly high. But the standard there was actual malice. And actual malice in lay terms simply means a reckless disregard for the truth. And then there's another legal premise called libel per se, which establishes four conditions under which the damages don't even have to be proved because it's libel on its face. That's what per se means. And one of those is accusing someone falsely of being convicted or accused of a crime of moral turpitude. And perjury, most certainly for an elected official, is a crime of moral turpitude. And where Mr. Nanos has a problem, as Benny points out, some people can claim, well, I really didn't know, maybe I was kind of off a little bit. No, this is a man who touts the fact he's in law enforcement for 40 years. He was a captain with the sheriff's department. Then he was a chief. Then he was the chief deputy. And then for a short time, he was the appointed sheriff. He cannot claim ignorance of the law. He knows the word perjury has a legal definition in Title 13. Further, he knows that the Law Enforcement Merit Council, under Title 38, has no authority to find me guilty of a parking ticket, much less a felony. So when he posted this billboard, he can't claim ignorance. And it is actual malice. And it's libel per se, and I'm not going to tolerate it. It's time the candidate stood up and said, okay, there are boundaries here, and this crossed the line.
Yes. Yes, and I think there's a lot of line crossing going on with this particular election with a lot of different people, but that one was one of the more egregious ones. I was like, oh, my God, do you have evidence? That's why I'm saying, if I've got the evidence, is it okay? Or, I'm going to stand a better chance in court if I'm going to be countersued or sued over something. But it doesn't sound like he has anything, a leg to stand on.
Well, no. In fact, Sherry, if I were found guilty of perjury, that would be cause for my removal from office as an elected official, which obviously has not happened. Further exacerbating this whole condition is that when a allegation was made by a single member of the Law Enforcement Merit Council regarding dishonesty, I asked that be investigated. The Pima County Attorney's Office and the Pinal County Attorney's Office both conducted what's called a Rule 15 review, which means could they find any indication of dishonesty at all? Both of those reviews came back and said there was no dishonesty. So not only was there not perjury, they could find no basis for any dishonesty. And Mr. Nanos knows that and yet continues to promulgate this lie in the hopes of tricking people into voting for him. That's You know, I hate to say this, but I hold the sheriff candidates to a much higher standard than I would Congress or state representatives or anybody, because we're applying to be the most powerful law enforcement officer in our county. And we rightly should be held to a higher standard of conduct in all things we do, and that includes the way that we campaign for office.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's really discouraging. And I think about the young kids that are watching these campaign ads and hearing the rhetoric being thrown around, and I'm like, wow, what kind of a world are they growing up in?
Well, I agree. But, you know, in all fairness, the bad campaign ads and this normal hype that we have around elections is nothing new. I mean, if you go back to the election of, you know, 1864 or even 1860 when Lincoln was running, there were caricatures of him that looked like an ape and all kinds of things. So we tolerate this somewhat. You know, we've grown to tolerate these hit ads and stuff. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is defamation. When you accuse somebody falsely of a crime, a felony crime, and a crime of moral turpitude, when you know that to be untrue, that crosses the line. That's not dirty politics. It's not something that we should kind of wink and nod and say this is just part of the political process. This is out of bounds.
Yes.
And I'm going to press this, because I went to four different attorneys independently, and I said, look, here's my concern. Am I out of bounds here? Does this, because if any one of them had flagged me off and said, no, Mark, you're overthinking this, I would have just said, okay, that's fair enough. But all four of them came back with exactly the same recommendation. No, this is defamation. And you can't allow your professional reputation that you built over almost four decades to be trashed by this man in a false way. That's why there are laws that prohibit defamation and allow you to recover damages.
Don't you think there should be some type of a process that would make something more immediate than what's happening? We were talking about it. It's like you can file a case or you can file a complaint. Well, the complaints so far have gone ignored. And you can file a case, but by the time it gets to the courthouse, the election's over.
Well, that's true. But my reputation lives on. You know, this is when you file a defamation lawsuit, it's in part to restore your reputation and to recover damages for the adverse impact on your professional and personal reputation. So while it does take a while for that to run through the process, the election is only one part of it. You definitely want to ameliorate the damage during the election. But more importantly, long after I'm not sheriff, I'm still going to be Mark Napier, and I still care about my professional reputation and my personal reputation. And he attacked those things with malice and defamation, and there has to be a consequence to that. I thought perhaps he would go to a lawyer, and the lawyer would say, look, Napier's just kind of asking for an apology, fall on the sword, say it was wrong,
do the right
move
thing.
Forward.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't do that.
Okay, Benny's here. He wants to say something.
Mark, I want to interject here just a little bit. There was an issue here also of the publication of this libelous claim by the billboard company. They claim to have an editorial process whereby they go through the checks to make sure that there are no legal liabilities imposed by what's being printed on the billboard. And in this case, that seems to have fallen apart. But my understanding was that you made a demand on the billboard company, and they reviewed what they had done, and they took that billboard down, which gives further evidence that it was, in fact, a defamatory statement.
You know, you're exactly right, Benny, and you with your legal hat on will also appreciate that this is now a third party that's saying, wait a minute, we made a huge mistake here. They took the billboard down after 4 days. The other thing that's important about this particular case is that you buy billboards based on the anticipated number of times it will be seen in a day.
Right.
This billboard resided at I-19 and I-10, so the billboard company can quantify the damage to my reputation based on how they sell that billboard. So the normally a person filing defamation would have to say, well, you know, on Facebook maybe 10 people saw this, and you wouldn't really even know, or maybe nobody got the newspaper that day. But in this case, we know the eyes on of that billboard at I-19 and I-10. Further, my opponent put it there deliberately so it would be seen by my employees commuting to work.
That probably involves more than 100,000 people per day.
It does. I think actually the number, if I'm not mistaken, is somewhere between 60 and 80,000 eyes on a day.
Yeah.
That now those people were led to believe that I had been convicted of a felony crime of moral turpitude, and I acknowledged that crime by appealing it, all of which are false, and Mr. Nanos knew that when he posted that. Here's the other thing, Benny. I mean, this got a bow on it. Sometimes the person committing defamation can say, well, I didn't know that this was posted. I had, you know, somebody else did it. Well, as you know, with political ads, guess what you have to put on there? Authorized by Chris Nanos.
Right, and you have to write a check.
So there's no way that he can claim he didn't know it was posted or that he didn't authorize its posting. We know the damage to my reputation because we know how many people see that in a day. And under libel per se, I don't even have to prove damage because libel per se says that if you are falsely accused of a crime of moral turpitude, the damage is implied. So you don't have to prove damage. I simply have to prove it occurred. And then he can't claim ignorance because he was the sheriff. He most certainly knows the law. We had to go to policeman school. So we most definitely know that perjury has a Title 13 definition and that the Law Enforcement Merit Council has certain authorities under Title 38, and those are not extended to finding anyone guilty of any crime. And he knows this. So he can't claim ignorance.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've been given some excellent legal advice and pursuing a prudent course to correct what has happened to you. You know, Sherry and I talked earlier about the fact that a defamation suit will take a long time to get resolved. But as you said, during a political campaign, you have to respond to these kinds of claims because you can't let that lie out in front of the voters without any response at all. So it does seem to me that you're taking a prudent course of action in both regards.
Well, I'm trying to, and anybody who knows me knows I'm a very measured man, and I often get criticized because I'm too polite. I'm too generous in the way I treat people. But I have my limits, and this is my limit. You know, I'm not going to be allowed to be accused of a felony crime in the public forum and not respond to that. You know, if he was printing ads that said I smell bad or whatever, I could care less. That's just a juvenile delinquent type of campaigning we become used to. But that's not what we're talking about here. If he has legitimate policy disagreements with me, then let him out there. State what they are, and then let the voters decide. That's what we should be doing. And this office, above all others, I think, should be held to a much higher standard of decorum in the way that we operate our political campaigns.
So true. So true. And you had a question for the sheriff, Nathan, if you don't mind, Sheriff.
So a controversial topic regarding law enforcement recently has been the use of body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So does the Pima County Sheriff's Office use body cameras? Why or why not?
We currently do not because we don't have the appropriation to support a body camera program. The purchase of body cameras is a small fraction, and I mean a very small fraction, the actual hardware of the cost of running the program. The collection of video evidence, the redaction, the public distribution under FOIA request, all these things take a lot of money and personnel. And it's not just in my shop either. So let's say that I found, I'll make up a number, $2.5 million to run a body camera program. Well, the Pima County Attorney's Office, I believe, would also have to hire additional people because we would now be flooding them with additional evidentiary video. And what's unique about a sheriff's department is we would presume that we would also extend a body camera into corrections. So I would have between 800 and 1,000 people wearing body cameras you know, collecting thousands and thousands of hours of video a day that has to be stored, and then we have to redact it appropriately for legal reasons when we distribute it to the court or as part of civil litigation. The I guess the short answer is I don't have money in my budget for it. Do I think body cameras at the Sheriff's Department are inevitable? Yes. Do I think that sometime during my second term in office we will probably have a body camera program? Yes. But that's going to require additional appropriation from the Board of Supervisors, not only for my department, but also for the Pima County Attorney's Office to help support this on the legal side. I think that eventually body cameras will be tied to federal grant acceptance. In other words, you won't be able to apply for a federal grant unless you have a body camera program. So I think they're coming, but I just don't have the money for it right now.
Okay, you have a second question, Nathan?
I sure do. So Arizona's Proposition 207, which will appear on the ballots this November, will deal with the legalization of marijuana. So if passed, what do you believe that the impact will be on the local Arizona communities?
Well, that's a great question. First, I think that the legalization of marijuana is probably inevitable. There are several problems with it. The first of which is that we don't have a presumptive level of intoxication with respect to marijuana. We all know that 0.08 is the presumptive level of intoxication for alcohol. So we know that there's this threshold. Currently, because marijuana is illegal, having any marijuana, any or if it's metabolites in your system at the time you're driving is presumptive evidence of impairment. Well, if we make it legal, that's a problem. So we're going to have to come to grips with that in some way. The other problem with marijuana is it's a fat-soluble drug. So unlike cocaine that has a very short duration in your bloodstream, so if you test positive for cocaine, you're probably also symptomatic. Marijuana is not the same way because it's excreted from your fat tissue for up to 30 days, especially if you're a heavy user. So you could have a positive test for marijuana in your urine and be asymptomatic. So there's some problems. Marijuana is kind of a unique drug in that respect. So I have some public safety problems about how we regulate things. For example, in the workplace, how do you determine if somebody's, you know, if you have an industrial injury in the workplace, how do you determine if marijuana was part of the problem because of, you know, being symptomatic under the influence of that drug? So I have a little bit of problem there. The other problem is more of a philosophical one. We don't know enough about the long-term health effects of marijuana, I feel, to make a good public health decision about whether this is a good thing from a public health perspective. When my parents grew up, smoking cigarettes was somehow believed to be healthy. That's true. I mean, they ran ads to that effect.
Yes, they did.
And we know that that's not true. And we've made mistakes with other drugs. Remember when, and this just goes back a few months, when vaping was supposed to be the safe alternative to smoking. I'm afraid we're making a similar mistake here, that we don't really know the long-term effects of marijuana. We want to believe it's a safe drug, but I'm not positive that that's true. So I'm a little bit concerned from that standpoint, but from a public policy standpoint, I believe that legalization nationally of marijuana is inevitable.
If I could, Mark, I listened to an FBI agent yesterday talking about the importation of drugs or illegal importation of drugs across the Mexican border, and he said that they're seeing an infusion of other chemical agents into the marijuana that's coming across to enhance the effects of it. Do we see that here in Pima County as well?
Yes, we do, Benny, but here's the thing. Presumably, if we legalize it, we would regulate the creation of it. So we would, presumably, there are some problems there as well, but presumably you would be getting it from regulated sources. Much like bathtub gin in Prohibition was much more dangerous than the gin you can buy at Walgreens right now, that's kind of the effect that we're having with marijuana. So, you know, there's certainly some of that. The other problem is that the marijuana that we're producing today is not mom and dad's marijuana. The THC content is much higher, and this is a relatively new phenomenon. And we don't know, again, from a public health perspective, that if you're ingesting marijuana that has five times the THC content, which is what makes you high, of the marijuana we've been smoking for decades, what are the long-term health effects of that? And we just don't know. We'd like to believe it's a safe drug, but we know that we legalize alcohol, and alcohol is anything but a safe drug, but we tolerate it. I mean, the damage, societal damage done to by alcoholism with respect to just health and criminal justice, you know, most of these family fights, alcohol is a contributing factor. Do we really want to introduce another drug into that equation? I guess if I had to go to a family fight where somebody was drunk or somebody was high, I would choose high because he'd just be looking for a ding-dong and a Twinkie as opposed to wanting to fight me. But I'm not a big fan of drugs in general, but I see on the horizon that this is inevitable.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we need to take another look at Colorado and things that have happened up there since they legalized everything. I know their homeless rate has increased considerably. It's not a good thing. Accidents, people are dying on the streets. And I know you pretty much watch what everybody's doing all around the country. Have you taken a closer look at Colorado?
Well, we do. And another problem with this whole, from a public policy standpoint, is the idea that we're going to use this as a source of revenue. Well, that's a wrong-headed approach. You know, we could probably use the same argument with methamphetamine. You know, we'll legalize it and tax it. Well, that's a wrong-headed approach. I think we need to look at lessons learned from places that have already legalized it and do that on a rational standpoint. The problem is that the zealots on both sides of this debate, only they cherry-pick their data. What we need are people who are public policy experts, criminal justice experts, to go in and rationally look at the data and say, what is the data really telling us? As opposed to people trying to prove a hypothesis and then find data that supports it.
Right. I think it's a mistake, and I didn't realize, I haven't got my book yet, so I don't know what's on the ballot this year. I know I've seen signs that say 208. What's that about, Benny?
That's increasing funding for education by taxing individuals or couples that make more than $400,000 per year.
Okay. Are there any other things on the ballot that we should be aware of, Sheriff?
The sheriff's race.
Yeah.
And? I think we need to pay attention, and I hope that people, when they look at the ballot, do their research. Let's be informed voters. I mean, the whole premise of our country is founded on this idea that we, you know, thoughtfully elect those who represent us, and I'm not sure that always occurs. So do your research on all candidates.
Yes.
You might find that you have a ballot that looks very weird, that you vote for some Democrats and some Republicans based on the quality of the candidates. That's what we should be doing, but I fear that there's just so many of us out there that are, you know, if I'm a Republican, I'm going to vote for all Republicans. If I'm a Democrat, I'll vote for all Democrats.
You know, I've said that before in the show. I've asked people, who'd you vote for? They say, well, whoever this was or whoever that was. And they vote for the party rather than the person. And they cannot name the person they put in office. They have no idea what that person's about. And
yeah,
it just makes me nuts.
Well, it's an affront to our democracy. And, you know, there's a saying that people get the government that they deserve. Well,
yes.
There's a lot of truth to that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is.
And as I look at the political landscape, I worry. I mean, you know, we have 330 million people in this country, and the current two presidential candidates are the best we could find.
That's kind of sad.
I'm troubled by that.
So if you were going to pick somebody to run for president right now, out of everybody, who would you pick?
I would pick somebody who understands that my granddaughter, who's 3 and a half, deserves to grow up in the meritocracy of the United States of America that I grew up in, and that person would realize that the purpose of government is to create that future for our grandchildren, that Social Security and Medicare are not an entitlement, they're a promise. They're a promise made to people decades ago, and this is not an entitlement. But somebody who sees this country as more important than their parochial self-interest, and that sees that we deserve to create a future for our grandchildren of this country, this shining star on the hill that we all grew up in and benefited from. Whoever that person would be is who I would vote for.
I know you're a historian. Who's your favorite president so far in history?
Boy, I like Grant a lot because he's a tragic figure in history. I like Lincoln. I think there's a lot of endearing things about Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt, remember at that point, Republicans were progressives. That's who we were. I mean, that's Teddy Roosevelt was the first conservationist. Teddy Roosevelt, and I'm paraphrasing here, said that just because the Constitution doesn't say we can do it doesn't mean we can't do it. So what he wanted to do is look at the Constitution not as a prohibitive document, but if it's not expressly prohibited by the Constitution, that doesn't mean you can't do it. So he expanded a little bit the role of the federal government. So I think there's a lot of good in Teddy Roosevelt. He was a conservationist, a progressive. So I like him a lot. I like Reagan. I like the ability to articulate thoughts. And Reagan was a powerful speaker. Eloquent. He captured your soul in the way that he spoke. So I think we've had some good presidents. I wish we could get back to that.
Parties, both sides, have really, really changed over the course of my lifetime.
Well, we've gotten so much more divided. If we woke up every day and looked at little children going to school and realized that our job at this point in our lives is to create their future, whether that little child is Hispanic, African American, it makes no difference. We need to create the future of the meritocracy of the United States of America that we grew up in so that they may enjoy the same things about this country that we did.
And I want to talk about vice president. If you're going to run for president, what kind of a vice president are you looking for?
Well, I think that primarily not a yes man for me. I don't like yes men. I didn't know I was going to run for president this morning. I'd have prepared my speech.
No, you're doing it. I'm nominating you. Here we go. Right in ballot.
But, I think that the vice president should not be a yes man. I think informed dissent on the part of the vice president is important, that we're not in lockstep. But moreover, you have to look at the vice president, whomever that is, and say that person's one heartbeat away from being the president.
Yes.
So how well is that person prepared at a drop of a hat? I mean, look at FDR and Harry Truman. Harry Truman was an amazingly odd pick for vice president at that time because I don't think anybody believed that FDR was going to survive the entirety of that term in office because his health was so poor. And I'm not sure that Harry Truman was the best choice. He did well, but I'm not sure he was the best choice. So I think I would want to choose somebody who is not necessarily like me, but complements my personality, but was able to engage in informed dissent, and should I drop dead, is absolutely ready at a moment's notice to become the President of the United States.
Yeah, and I think that's that pick is what caused McCain the election.
I would agree. That was a bizarro pick. I don't know what, I'm sure the smarter people than me made that decision, but I don't know what it was based on.
Yeah, I don't either. Okay, Benny, talk to us about early ballots and how soon can we mail in our ballots and what's going on. Give us some deadlines.
Okay, October 5th, last day to register. October 7th, the ballots will be mailed out. If you haven't received your mail ballot by October 16th, which is the following Friday, call a recorder's office and say, where's my ballot? October 26th, I believe it is, the last Friday and the week before the election is the last day you can request an early ballot, and then we're going to go to the polls on November 3rd and elect some new folks.
New president, new everything, brand new start.
Yep.
Okay. And, Sheriff, what are your last words? Go to the...
To everybody out there that may be listening, exercise your right to vote intelligently. And if you believe my opponent is a better choice for sheriff, that's who you should vote for. But do so intelligently because we owe that to the country. Every vote on that ballot, from president to senator to congresspeople to state representatives to school board, all these things are very, very important. So vote intelligently. Do your research. Our country requires that.
It deserves that. Our kids deserve that. Do your research. And don't get your news off social media. Good grief. And go to your website. Where's your website?
It's SheriffNapier2020.org, SheriffNapier2020.org. A lot of information about me on there. I prepared my whole life for this position, and I'd be honored to have people's vote for re-election. I'd love to serve this community for another 4 years.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on and talking to us. Benny has a website, too, quickly.
Benny4Recorder.com.
Okay, and we'll see everybody next week. Thank you.